Hello, friends and folks, and welcome back to another playlist podcast from Scanline Media. I'm Six Detmar.
And I'm Jennifer Uncle.
And I'm Kyrie Page.
And we're here to talk about the games that have been keeping us busy the last couple of weeks.
Video games,
yeah. Well, I mean, if you had board games, I think that'd be valid.
Oh, I could talk about a tabletop game that I'm starting in, but we'll see.
Well, you know, we will see how the spirit moves. And by the spirit, of course, I mean Earth spirit, because I'm playing Dota again. But we're not going to talk about that. That's a fake out. I've got a Dota podcast.
Oh, God. You already have a Dota podcast.
Right. I was just testing you.
Do you want a minute to talk about Dota? Do you need the Dota minute?
I guess I'll have a very quick Dota minute, which is I'm playing Dota again, and I'm mostly having a good time, but also, I don't know, shit's crazy. There we go.
Now, do you play with friends, or do you play with randos?
I mostly play with randos. I play with friends when they're around, but, like, they have, like MMO-style role queue now, where you can be like, I am playing as a support. Find me a team where I can be a support. And that's made the experience a lot better, so.
Yeah, I know, that's been a, staple in MMOs for a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, so it's great that they finally got there with this. Because, you know, in MMOs, if you're playing a class that can't heal, it can't heal. You can't be like, oh, okay, I'll try. It's like, it's not a question of skill. You don't have the abilities. In Dota, theoretically, anyone could play any role. You're just picking a character. But some people suck ass at certain roles. If you want me to play what's called a carry, where it's my job to be, like, the strong one everyone relies on, I'm fucking terrible. So, yeah. Support. Cool. I'm great at not, the thing I'm bad at is farming, which is like, you know, grinding. Basically, I'm bad at getting golden experience.
I'm bad at farming too. I can't stand being out in the fields. Too many bugs.
You know, when I was a kid, I actually tried some farming. I played a bunch of Harvest Moon and I thought it was great. So I tried to start a garden outside my window.
How'd that turn out for you?
It was clay. It didn't go great.
My brother played a ton of Harvest Moon, and I used to not understand it, and then I got a little older, and I played, Stardew Valley, and it was like, oh, I understand why these games are good now.
Excellent. So, I assume you haven't been playing Stardew Valley recently, but what have you been playing?
So, I've been playing two things, mostly on my Switch. Kind of three. I dabble with Tetris 99 here and there. Tetris 99 has been constantly being supported and updated, and it's just good-ass Tetris. So that's always fun to play. I've actually won a few, Tetris Royales. You know, I mean, they call it Maximus, but it's like, we know what they're talking about. You know, it's the Tetris Fortnite burger.
Is Tetris Royale already a thing? Tetris Royale.
Tetris 99. Yeah.
Tetris. Oh, no. Okay. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about.
I didn't know that was the proper name of Tetris 99.
Yeah.
Wait, no, that's a different game.
Wait, is there a Tetris Royale?
Tetris Royale is going to be the phone version of Tetris 99 that's coming out soon.
Gross. Tetris on a phone. Tetris on a touchscreen doesn't work.
Does Ubisoft still have all the rights for Tetris phone versions, or did that go to EA? I feel like they were tussling between the rights for that kind of thing for a while.
It says it's a partnership between Network and the Tetris company, so it doesn't seem like there's an Ubi in sight.
Yeah, I think that at a certain point, the Tetris company just, said, fuck it, we have all the rights to Tetris.
Seems like their software is a little less ubiquitous than it used to be. So you've been playing those new Tetris 99 features?
Yeah, they added a new feature where you can be matched up with people who have, already, won Royales before. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty cool because it starts at a higher speed of dropping, and I like that a lot because I had this thing for, I don't know, I love playing Tetris DS, a lot. And then a while ago, I decided I'm going to try and score 1,000,000 points in the 200 line Tetris DS thing. And the way you do that is you crank the speed all the way to the maximum and try to, you know, match as many Tetrises and T-spins and triples as you can. And I did it. So it is nice to play a game where it starts at a higher speed because I'm used to just blocks dropping really quickly. But that's that. Not much to say, it's good ass Tetris. If you have Nintendo Switch Online, you should, because they have Super Nintendo games now. That's a lot of fun. But I've mostly been playing Final Fantasy VIII Remastered.
Oh, yeah.
So, I have a weird relationship with Final Fantasy VIII, in that Final Fantasy VIII was one of the first games I played on a PS2. Because my brother got a PS2 off of eBay and also a copy of Final Fantasy VIII. I actually have the copy of Final Fantasy VIII in my room in a box somewhere that we played off of. And I have this, like, my nostalgia for that game is weird, because I associate that with a lot of different, like, a lot of different disparate things, not necessarily related to the game itself, if that makes sense.
Sure, sure. It's tied up in a lot of your experiences while playing the game in the past.
Yeah. It's tied up in, like, the fact that the PS2 we got, that the PlayStation 2 controller itself, like, or the PS2 was owned by a smoker, so it, like, had that slight scent of, like, tobacco on it.
Sure.
And I associate that with Final Fantasy VIII on some level, because that was the one game we, like, had for a little while. And going back to it with, like, 20 years of, like, distance between that game, lets me understand that, like, the game is good. Like, it holds up spectacularly well. Like, the junction system is still, like, a little bit of a mess. It's still, like, a little hard to wrap your head around. I don't know what I did back, you know, 20 years ago. Like, I was... I'm trying to think when we would have played it. PS2 would have been out... I don't know, early 2000s-ish is when I played it. And I don't know how I got far in that game, because I still don't necessarily understand junctioning now, but I have a better grasp of it. And Remastered looks like the game it looked like in my head, if that makes sense.
Sure, sure.
Like, yeah, I've heard that a lot from people.
Like, they did a lot of things to clean up the graphics and make it look a little bit more presentable, because the FF8 has not necessarily aged particularly well in the graphics department. Like, it was impressive for the time, but it now is, like, now looks kind of cruddy. But Remastered completely changes that. It makes it look like a high-res, like, PS2 game, and I mean that as a compliment. Also, the text is nice and legible. You know, they kept the text boxes the same size, and I have a problem with tiny text boxes. Like, I couldn't play Fire Emblem in handheld mode at all. Oh, sorry, my dog is coughing.
Hope he feels better. Or she?
She'll feel better in a second. Anyway, what was I saying?
Problem with the text boxes in Fire Emblem.
Yeah, those text boxes are way too fucking tiny. Like, I can't play that in handheld mode. But for FF8 Remastered, all the text boxes are nice and big, and I think they're at, like, a higher resolution than, like, I think on the PS4 version, the text boxes are actually in 4K, so they're nice and crisp, but they're still really crisp on the Switch. So I can play it at a nice, comfortable distance, and it's nice and, legible and the writing holds up. It is a funny game. Like, Final Fantasy VIII has the, you know, notoriety of being like, oh, Squall is a big emo. And it's like, yeah, Squall is a big emo, but he's also kind of funny. Like, there's something kind of charming to his, like, weirdness.
There are times where I recall his, like, his emo-iness, his sort of, like, general attitude leads to sort of some sort of like fun like perspective that JRPG characters don't often have. Like when you get Quistis in your party, Quistis at first is like this, you know, this teacher around the school and like a younger teacher, and she's clearly is having trouble with the job, and then she gets demoted to being a normal squad mate again and she joins your crew. And when that happens, she sort of, like, pulls you onto a balcony and just starts ranting about you, about her life story. And Squall's internal monologue is like, why are you doing this?
Yeah, what is wrong with you? I really like that moment. Because there's also, like, good dramatic moments of, like, Quistis is, like, saying, Squall, aren't you listening? And he's like, no, not really. You dragged me out here to fight a Tyrannosaurus. Which is like I beat up a T-Rex by junctioning sleep to my gunblade and just beating it up over and over.
I'm going to stab you to sleep.
Yeah, basically. And there's also just like funny moments in the game where so I'm nearly at the end of disc one. It's really funny that the save screen still denotes which disc you're on. Which is really good because the original game shipped on 4 discs. And so I'm near the end of disc one and you go on this mission with Rinoa and her crew. And after the mission kind of falls apart, like Rinoa and her crewmates have a squad meeting and that's just like ducking in a corner somewhere. They just squat in a corner for a little bit.
Official meeting.
Yep.
No outsiders allowed.
No outsiders are allowed. But yeah, it's really good. The rumble doesn't vibrate when you hit I guess the R trigger
for the gun blade,
which is unfortunate. Mm. But still good.
So that was a nice bit of feedback getting that little pulse, but oh well.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I should get. I want to pick it up once things quiet down. Obviously, it's been a bit of a crazy time, as far as you know. Like we're not one of the big gaming sites, right? Sometimes you'd think we were pretending that we were, given the number of games we try to cover.
We try our best.
Yeah, so we're a little swamped with all the releases, and I think Final Fantasy VIII is going to have to wait for me, but I was very fond of the game as a youth, and I am definitely looking forward to giving it another shot.
Yeah, it's definitely worth giving another shot, and they've done a lot of things to, like modernize it in a way that makes sense.
Hmm. What have you been up to, Jen, besides the game that you can't talk about, because we've got another podcast?
Yeah, the game that I can't talk about has, it took a significant amount of time to actually finish it because 28 hours is harder to come by as something you can do at once instead of doling it out. So, aside from that, I've been playing mostly smaller things. Like, I joined up onto Apple Arcade when that came out a few days ago on iPad, and that's been incredibly overwhelming. Speaking of games that, speaking of how hard it is to cover a bunch of games at once.
Like, didn't they like release just a bunch of games all at once?
Yeah. Like there's like 100 games on there and a significant amount of them are, this is the game's first launch, whether it's launching alongside other platforms or just launching exclusively on Apple for a bit. And, it's been difficult to figure out what I want to play, so I've just been doing one at a time based on people's recommendations. I played through the entirety of Sayonara Wild Hearts, which is the new Simago game. They're the people who did the horror game Year Walk and the odd mystery Device 6.
Oh, did they make a good game this time?
Oh, I definitely think that this game would be more to your liking, Six, because
it seems like a complete departure from what they've normally made, because Sayonara Wild Hearts like looks like this very poppy, very like fun, lighthearted thing.
Yeah, it's like a rhythm game / music video where you're playing this I'd say young adult woman who is going through a breakup, and it kind of imagines her path through getting over that as she's basically pulled into this world of tarot cards and turns into a superhero of sorts and skateboards around, rides a motorcycle, sword fights these various gang members, gets turned into a video game cartridge at one point and goes through a small bullet hell section. And it's constantly switching genres back to back to back. It's all while maintaining a rhythm game presence.
So is it closer to something like Rhythm Tengoku, where it's like you're just playing a bunch of different like mini games, or
Kyria, you're in America?
Rhythm Heaven.
Like, listen, if word's untranslatable, I'll cut you some slack, but you don't get to say Keikaku, say plan.
Okay, I will Keikaku on doing that in the future.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's I wouldn't say it's exactly like that, because, I don't know, it feels like it's more, even after you're moving from thing to thing, it's not saying suddenly you're chopping up wood or suddenly you're trying to get a bunch of people to sing together. You're still mostly platforming, but the way that you platform through these places or fight with swords is contextually changes constantly. And in the meantime, there's a few Debussy songs that are remixed, and they're the songs that play when you're traveling from world to world. And then once you're in the actual world itself, when you're going against these people, it switches over to this pop track with vocals, and nearly all of them are stellar. And also, they got Queen Latifah to narrate the whole thing.
What?
Yeah, like there's this amazing developer story where Annapurna, who were big in indie films and still are, but also have gotten into games lately, were talking with one of the Simogo developers, and the developer was like, hey, if we had a narrator, Queen Latifah would be fun, just kind of as a what-if scenario. And then Annapurna called them back a few days later and was like, hey, we got Queen Latifah to do this for you.
That sounds a little bit like the story of Brutal Legend, where they designed the character like loosely off of Jack Black, and it was mostly like a gag. It was like, oh, what if we could get Jack Black to voice his character? And then lo and behold, they managed to get him.
Yeah. And I will say the one thing that kind of bothered me, at least initially, is that it's difficult to get a good score in this game, because while you're going through these levels and completing the prompts and everything like that, there are little gems along the track that you collect, and those lead to you getting a bronze, silver, or gold ranking, I think. And these levels are so fast-paced, and your input is constantly changing to the point where it was difficult for me to find the through path for these collectibles sometimes. So I play a lot of rhythm games, and just this fact of being like, this seems very difficult for you to do on the first try kind of turned me off, but it does seem like a game that you're supposed to play multiple times. Like, after you complete it for the first time and you're doing it level by level, it unlocks a new mode where you just hit go and you spend like 40 to 50 minutes going through the whole thing.
Or like a whole playlist kind of mode?
Yeah, the whole playlist. It feels like it's the mode that's like, okay, here's the album version. Here's you just listening to it from beginning to end, and also playing it from beginning to end, instead of having breaks in between levels.
Yeah, that sounds really cool.
Yeah?
Yeah, I downloaded it on my phone, because I decided to take the free trial of Apple Arcade, but I haven't played it yet because, okay, here's an experiment. Take your hand, right?
Which mm-hmm. hand? Right or left?
Either hand, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
And put it together. My phone's smaller than that. I've got an iPhone SE, and it's, like, super comfortable. I love having this phone. It's great to put in my pocket. It's great to take it places. I don't know that I want to play, like, a 3D rhythm game with a controller on a screen that's, like, 4 inches.
Yeah, that sounds like a little... Sounds like you... Is Sayonara Wild Hearts on, like, any other platform?
It is, but I'd have to pay for it.
That's a little problematic, huh?
I mean, you know, it's just I totally would be willing to pay for it, but it's one of those things where it feels stupid to pay for it if you've got it for free, you know?
Yeah, I totally get you. Like, on the one hand, you're supporting developers and stuff like that, but on the other hand, your brain's like, well, this, I could be using this money to get a different game, and then I'd just be able to play for free over here instead. But,
I mean, in my case, it's like, I could be using this money to get lunch today, but, you know, and also, I mean, the other thing is I still am sort of supporting the developers. It's not like I'm pirating it. It's Apple Arcade. They're theoretically getting paid a little bit.
I would hope so. Better than Google's fucking plan.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing is, people kept comparing Apple Arcade to Spotify, and... While there is some merit to that, the big difference is that Apple Arcade is paying people up front for their games, and just because it looks good to have these games on here, so they're willing to put in the cash. Meanwhile, Google's like, okay, you'll get paid a few cents based on how many hours people spend in your app, and some of those apps are like weather apps. It's like, how the fuck do you expect this to happen when people only check a weather app once a few seconds every day?
Yeah, that's shitty.
Yeah, it's not great.
But speaking of games that it feels like it would be foolish for me to pay money for, since it was added to Game Pass, I have been playing Bloodstained Ritual of the Night.
Hell yeah. The latest Igavania?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do we have an alternate term to Metroidvania? Because I fucking hate Metroidvania as a term.
Metroid-like, because Metroidvania just means Metroid, because fucking Symphony of the Night was like, what if we put Metroid in Castlevania, which already had Castlevania in it? Sorry.
No, it's fine. It's like, God, no, it's just, I sometimes think about, like, all the terms that we have for genres, and, like, Metroidvania is probably the one I hate the most.
It feels like calling, like, oh, first-person shooters, you mean Golden Dooms. It's like, no, GoldenEye was just copying Doom. It doesn't get to get added to the fucking genre name.
Yeah, it's a bit of a mess. I think I've seen some people in the past call them ability-gated progression games or something like that, which doesn't really roll off the tongue, but it kind of gets to the idea of what it's going for a bit better, because those games are all about starting out with next to nothing. You pick up abilities, those abilities get you into more rooms or get you into side areas they can go back to. That kind of thing.
I just think that, like, game genres need, like, a complete rename and a complete rehaul from the ground up, but that's just me.
Try this one on. Progression platformer.
Perfect.
Pow.
That's I feel like that works most of the time. It kind of gets a bit airy once you deal with something like Batman Arkham Asylum, since that's pretty much the same kind of game, but you're...
Yeah, it is.
I guess you are doing platforming, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you're going from platform to platform.
Airtight. Perfect.
Or canopy.
You're going from PS3 to 360.
Yep.
So, I picked this up because I was like, hey, you know what fucking whips ass, pun intended, are those DS Castlevania games. Those were fucking great. I love those games. And I was like, and this is free. I've been meaning to get it. I've been waiting for that Switch version to get the patch that makes it run. But like, hey, now I guess I can get it for free. Though I still might get it for Switch, because this game is fucking great.
Whips ass.
I'm having a fantastic goddamn time with this game. So it is what you expect. It's a Castlevania game. I think it's fairly pretty. I think the 3D stuff works really well, the 3D, 2D. Occasionally, it's one of those weird instances where I actually think the backer, like, you know, it was, you know, obviously it was a Kickstarter game. And I think that fact actually helps it at times.
Really?
There are times when it's kind of annoying because it's like, oh, look, there are, like, portraits of backers everywhere, and the art style feels a bit weird because they're too representative of people, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're not abstract enough, and so it's like, okay, this doesn't really fit the rest of the art style. But then it's like, people backed to get enemies, and so you'll round a corner, and it's like, oh, here's like a 80-foot tall just house cat with devil
yeah,
horns.
Yeah, I saw that. It's so cute.
It's great. There's just a lot of stuff where, like, clearly this is on the backers. The backers were like, oh, I've got the ability to put stuff in the game. I've got great ideas. And they did.
My house cat with horns.
Yeah, and on some level it does sound like the kind of thing that those older Castlevania games were known for. Like, just ridiculous enemies that you wouldn't expect to see in Dracula's castle, except here they are.
And also, I mean, like, it's that way with the abilities, too, but also there's a history of that with the abilities. Like, I remember there was one of the bonus bosses, and I played the shit out of Castlevania Portrait of Ruin.
Hell yeah, Portrait of Ruin fucking ruled.
And one of the bosses down in like the I forget, it was like the Nest of Evil or something, some like post game bonus area that was like a boss rush, was an enemy that was weak to dark type damage. And it's like, what? There are like no sources of dark type damage in this game. There is one. If you're playing as Jonathan, he has a sub weapon, which is a cream pie. Which you just shove into their face, and that does dark damage. And it's a terrible weapon unless you use it a ton to level it up and master class it, and then he just throws like a gigantic fucking pie. And so I fought this boss, and I was just throwing massive goddamn pies and doing a ton of damage. And that kind of thing is represented here too, because it's like, I haven't gotten this one yet, actually. I'm trying to get it, I'm trying to farm it, but like, there's an enemy who's just like a fucking, like, classic anime, like, bartending bunny girl.
Mm-hmm. Classic.
And there's a percent chance that if you beat her, you get the ability to shapeshift into a fucking bunny girl. And it's like, hell yeah, I'm here for that.
Why not?
That's fun.
Yeah.
It feels like it knows not to take itself seriously, but also keeps up the... You know, it's that balance that Symphony of the Night hit so well that kind of made it great, without the layer of bad localization, but it understands, like, it takes itself seriously so that you cannot take it seriously.
Yeah, it strikes a tone. Like, I remember playing Symphony of the Night on my, like, I played the PSP version back in the day and loving it because of its, like, it was just a weird little game and it had so many fun little details in it.
Mm-hmm.
Upside down castle is great. It's like such a good idea to be like, oh, we're just gonna flip the castle upside down.
It's sick.
Yeah. Is there any upside down castles in Bloodstained, or you haven't gotten that far yet?
I have not gotten that far yet. I am still quite early, honestly. And I'm looking forward to playing this for quite a while because it seems to be a decently long game, and it has unlockable characters. You could play as David Hayter with a katana.
What?
Yeah, David Hayter's in this game, and he's got a katana.
Yeah. Well, he voices a guy named Zangatsu, I think.
But, you know, the first time he shows up, he's like,
"Kept
you
waiting,
smell
huh?
like blood." And you're like, yeah, hi, Snake. What's up? You've only got the one voice, huh? That's fair. I get it. I only have the one voice, too.
Listen, Hayter has done very well for himself on that one voice.
It's a fun voice. That's the thing that I think people don't give him enough credit for. Like, you know, there was that period where everyone thought it was really hot to make fun of the Solid Snake voice. Like, yeah, the fact that it's campy is the point.
Yeah, it's a campy, like, it's campy as all hell. That's why, like, that's why those games work, is because it is, like, completely ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he has a pretty good Lupin voice, but that's a different conversation.
Speaking of Bloodstained, did you ever try that 8-bit version that they put out?
I did not. So I have connected less with the older Castlevania, so their pitch on that didn't hook with me as much, so I never did give it a shot.
I played that on the Vita a while ago, and that was pretty cool. It's a short little game, but is built around more Castlevania 3 rather than Symphony of the Night.
Dracula's Curse.
Yep. And you can either, it was really cool because you play as Zangetsu, and the idea is that there's two routes through the game where either A, you like take down the other characters and absorb their abilities, or you recruit them and they become separate playable characters.
Oh.
It was a really cool thing, and its pixel art was really pretty, and the art design is really good. If you're not into playing it, I think Giant Bomb did Vinny did an LP of it.
Sure, that sounds like something he'd do.
Yep.
Yeah, and it was made by the Inti Creates people, who they have some clunkers here and there, but overall I think they have mastered that style of game pretty well.
Yeah, I can't blame them too hard for I can't blame them too hard for the one big clunker.
I can, but I decided not to at this time.
Blaster Master didn't seem too hot either, but...
Oh, I was talking about Mighty Number 9.
Oh, I know. I was just saying, they're like platinum in my mind. They make some great games, they make some not some great games. And it goes back and forth.
I just can't believe we haven't gotten Mighty Number 10 yet. Like, what are they doing?
Oh, what about Red Earth? Where is that?
Oh, Red Earth is... Well...
It's in the earth, my friend. Deep, buried deep.
It's an old Capcom. It's an old Capcom game.
One more thing before we move on from Bloodstained. One thing I did notice from watching people's videos is, you know that thing in Castlevania Symphony of the Night or those other games where you get new items for your character to wear, but they're just names. They don't really affect anything. In this, they affect things. So you'll get something like a pirate hat, and it's literally a pirate hat on your character.
Some of them do. If you get like chest slot stuff, her dress won't change, but yeah, you can put on various accessories. So I right now have her wearing glasses and a little headband because I'm tasteful. Aww. But yes, I could have her wearing like Groucho Marx glasses and a pirate hat. I do have that option.
That sounds really charming.
Yeah, I'm having a good time with it.
Yeah, I'm really happy that it like turned out as well as it did.
Turns out one of these, you know, great Japanese creators who went off to make their own Kickstarter actually knew what they were doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's also notable because the way that it was shaping up before they made a bunch of changes to it kind of spelt not disaster, but people were kind of like, this doesn't look super great. And then they were able to take that feedback and make it into something that people love.
Yeah.
Iga threw his wine glass and was like, let's prove him wrong.
Well, he literally did. He had that video where he did that.
Yeah, it was great.
All right, well, next person's turn? Who's got a game?
I got a game.
Who wants to come to the table?
I've been messing around with. This is another game that has, like, an odd bit of nostalgia for me. I, on a whim, downloaded Puzzle Quest The Legend Returns.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Puzzle Quest.
Yeah. So, if you're not familiar with Puzzle Quest, dear listener, it is basically Bejeweled, but with RPG elements. And it was originally an Xbox Live game, wasn't it?
I played it on PSP. I think it had some simultaneous launch shit going on.
I played it on PSP as well. Like, that was the main platform I played it on. And, I played that a lot, mostly when I was, like, it was around the same time that I played a lot of Team Fortress 2 and was waiting to get onto servers. So sometimes like a queue would be up or something like that, and I would just play Puzzle Quest for a while. or I would be watching something or listening to something. And Puzzle Quest to me was like the game that you play on mute and you do something else while you're playing it. Mm. And it is still that game to me, except like, so The Legend Returns is like, they say it's a, you know, oh, it's a
return to form,
or an HD. It's like, oh, we've made everything HD and all that. But it's like, no, it kind of looks like crap on some level. Like, I'll keep it real with you, Chief. It looks like shit. It looks like a 10-year-old like Xbox Live arcade game. And it still has that jank like that was present in the original game, where like occasionally I will make a gem switch and then it will freeze for like a couple seconds, but it's still good, I think. Like, it's weird, like I play it and it's like, again, I play it exclusively while I'm playing, like while I'm listening or watching something else. And it, like, I would say if you've played the original Puzzle Quest and you have like some affection for that, like, it's still that game with all it, with warts and all, you know. Mm. Like, there's a lot of menus and a lot of like little minutiae that like makes it just a little clunkier than it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like accepting quests and like moving around in the overworld and all that. But it's still like, if you liked Bejeweled and you liked like Puzzle Quest, like it's still, it, I would say it's better than Puzzle Quest 2, which I tried getting into and couldn't. I don't know.
Was that the space one?
There was the space one. I didn't play any of the space one. There was a Puzzle Quest 2 where it was still the fantasy setting, but okay. It just didn't... Look, I just felt like it didn't work as well. And I don't know, maybe this game doesn't work that well either, but I still kind of like it. It has touchscreen support on the Switch version, which I think it's only on Switch right now. I'm not sure. It's $15 and it's a good little, like, it's a good little game to play while you're on a commute or doing something else. And again, I would just recommend playing it with the sound off because the sound is pretty bad. There's like a terrible like opening cutscene with like really bad voice acting, and it's,
hell yeah, yeah,
it's kind of great. But I don't know, what I mean by clunkiness is like it still has like, it's the same mechanics as it was 10 years ago, and I think about how puzzles have been like redesigned and like improved in the past 10 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like general feel, like for example, like you have to tap the buttons or you have to tap the D-pad or the stick to like move the cursor like each space. You can't just like hold it, or like say you're on the right side of the board and you want to switch a gem on the left side of the board, you can't just hold the left side, you have to keep tapping it. Which is a little annoying, but it's like, that's how it was in the original game, and it was, like, it plays decently enough.
Mm-hmm.
I would say if it was cheaper than it was, like, it was $15, like, if it drops, like, to $5, I would say give it a try, because it is interesting. Like, it is an interesting marriage of, like, puzzles and RPGs, but, I don't know. It's, again, a weird nostalgic thing for me because I, like I said, I played it so much on the PSP that, like, I got to a point where I was able to freeze the game regularly by, like, using a certain combination of spells. Because what happens is you get these spells that affect the game board, and if you get like a four of a kind or five of a kind, you get an extra turn. And I would just set up a situation where I would generate like 10 five of a kinds and just freeze the game.
You're a hacker.
Yeah, I hacked the system. I was a wizard.
Wizards are like hackers.
Wizards
are just like of reality.
Exactly. But yeah.
With that observation.
Yeah, with that observation, Puzzle Quest, The Legend Returns, is it should just been like the original. The subtitle was Challenge of the Warlords, which was also an equally dumb title. And it's like, it's just Puzzle Quest. Just call it Puzzle Quest.
It's weird because I always have, like, my brain, I have a lot of memories of Puzzle Quest, but also I similarly didn't play it with sound on. And so I have stuck in my brain the image of, like, completing a level in Puzzle Quest, and then the Professor Layton, another puzzle solved. not how that went. That's inaccurate.
Speaking of coming back to older games, the other big thing I've been playing lately is The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening, the Switch remake.
Yeah.
I have an interesting history with that game in that I had the original Game Boy version when I was a kid on like a Game Boy Pocket. Like, I think it was my first console ever, and I never saw most of the game. Most of my time with that game was walking around the village, stealing things and getting caught, slashing the chickens until I died from the chickens, and getting lost in the forest. And
oh, you're a monster.
I didn't know how to progress, so I was poking at things and watching.
You're like,
happens.
I don't know how to save the world, so I'm going to destroy it. What if I stole from people and then murdered their chickens?
Look, I was a kid. Kids have problems with understanding right from wrong sometimes.
I didn't.
Anyway,
managed to never kill a single chicken my whole life, Jen.
You're not telling me. Well, I never managed to kill a real chicken. I know.
Oh, so you tried, you just tried? Failed. Okay.
I was gonna say, I never managed to kill a chicken in the video game either, because what happens
is. Oh, but
is
in
you
real
slash-
life, it went just smoothly.
There was a lot less blood in the video game version.
But also, they didn't call their friends. They just cried for help, and no one came. No one was there to help them as Jen tore this chicken limb from limb.
So, Jennifer.
Yeah.
How's
chicken killing days aside.
How's that remake?
It's a fairly good remake. Like, I'm getting much further in it than I ever did before. I'm in the Face Temple right now. It's a beautiful game. Like, they redid all the music with a full orchestra, and that includes covering little ditties that were in there as Easter eggs in the past. Like, the original composer for this game had a little song that he snuck into every one of the games that he made. And if you enter his nickname in the as your name when you're starting a new game, you hear this out-of-control trumpet recreate that melody with a bit of drum in the background, I believe. And it's also visually very good. Like,
I watched you play it, and it looks beautiful. Like, it looks like looking into a diorama.
Basically, yeah. And all the characters have this cutesy... I wouldn't call them chibi. They're more like little wooden mannequins, or what you'd see from, I don't know, the old Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer Christmas special. Except a little bit more sanded off than that. And
They don't look like claymation. They look like sort of like painted wooden figures.
Exactly, yeah. And one thing that does kind of stink is it seems like it looks a bit too good for the Switch at times, because anytime you enter and leave an area or go into a house and leave that house, the frame rate drops for like 5 to 10 seconds. And sometimes just picking up a pot and throwing it on the ground will make the resolution decrease for a second and it chug until it pops back up a second later. It feels like they're really pushing the limits on this, weirdly enough, which is it's a game that's over 20 years old, so it feels like that shouldn't be happening, but I don't know. I appreciate what they did with the visuals enough that having a few seconds of load time and stutter here and there isn't too much of a deal breaker for me.
For me, I'm also playing it. And for me, it kind of is a big deal, I guess. I find myself frustrated because this game is very close to mechanically identical to the original. There are a few little changes here and there. There are a few like quality of life things, and then like there's the new dungeon builder thing with Dompei, which sucks and is not worth your time. So basically all there is that's new to this game is the presentation, and it doesn't run right.
Yeah.
And
it is a shame.
I think that's disappointing.
Yeah, it is a shame because like of how good the game looks, like you wish that it had like a stable frame rate. It feels like they're going like watching it, they were going for like a locked 60, but then whenever too much stuff happens on screen, they drop it to 30, and it's like, I don't know, it doesn't feel like a great decision. It's like at a certain point, I feel like they should have just locked it at 30.
Well, it definitely goes below 30.
Oh, it does?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. Especially, like, I would say it's particularly when the tilt shift positioned itself in such a way where you can see a lot in the background, I would say it drops into low 20s.
That's rough.
Maybe upper teens. It drops. And not for very long. Like, it's certainly, I've never had it even slightly impair my play experience. But basically, since this is a game that's this old that I've beaten 3 times before, that is in ways, I think, showing its age. The only reason I'm here is for the spectacle. And if you can't make the spectacle work, then that's really frustrating.
It seems like we're running into a situation where, I don't know, I feel like it's safe to say now that the Nintendo Switch is kind of a garbage system. Like, like, the convenience of it is second to none. And it's cool that they're re-releasing all these various games in a portable form in a way that you can take it around and mess around with it that way. But most games don't run well on it. And that's kind of a big thing. Like, even games that are small, like, initially I thought, oh, okay, people aren't just used to the architecture, when I played some indie games and they ran, like, total dog shit on this thing. But more and more, I'm just seeing almost every game that is multi-platform run pretty poorly on it. And even some of them that are straight-up exclusive. Like, this is Nintendo's in-house team, and even they can't get this game to run stably on their own hardware.
Well, okay, so as far as multi-platform, I mean, like, that's just the fate of being the weaker machine. I don't think that that's a problem with the hardware. It's like, I mean, that happened back when games were coming out on GameCube, PS2, and Xbox. Yeah. The PS2 version ran worse than the others. That's just how it goes. Mm-hmm. As far as, like, yeah, this is definitely an oddity, and there were some problems with frame rate at occasional spots in Breath of the Wild. I do think we're at a point where this machine is underpowered. I think it's fair to say that, given the ambition of studios making games for it. But I still like it as a machine. I still, like, I mean, there's plenty of games I play. I'm not going to talk much about it here, but I've played a bunch of, like, Untitled Goose Game. I have not had a single problem with it. It runs great. I think it's a system where people need to be mindful of its limits, because it's so far behind the other machines on the market that it's easy to sort of overreach. But I don't think that that makes it a bad machine, just a limited one.
That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's definitely a situation where it can be tough to manage audience expectations somewhat, because if you're making something like, say, a visual novel I've been playing for the past week, they're like, oh, okay, you're going to be bringing this to Switch too, right? And they're like, sure, but when you play it on the Switch, you have situations where you're waiting 10 to 15 seconds in between certain lines of dialogue, and between that 10 to 15 seconds, you'll see a single image. It's loading in a single image, so someone can say something, and that image disappears and it's back to business.
Well, in that instance, I might be willing to say that that studio just didn't optimize very well. I don't think I'm willing to hold, like, I have seen the game you're talking about, and, like, you know, I am not a game designer, I am not a coder. I haven't seen anything from that game that makes me think the Switch isn't capable of running it. It's to think that it's they built it in a weird way.
Yeah, that's a good point. And sort of like how the Mortal Kombat 11 devs built that version in a really weird way, with their whole crypt having Turok 64 level fog and barely running.
Yeah, well, that game never should have come out on Switch, frankly.
Yeah.
Yeah, or if it did, they should have just, like, it supposedly runs stably as long as you're only doing fighting, so maybe chop a few dollars off the price, or more like 20 or so, and make it a fighting-only thing? I don't know.
Don't play Mortal Kombat 11 just for the fighting. That game sucks.
Yeah. yeah. Yeah.
So,
play DBZ instead.
Really do. Do you want to talk about DBZ?
Let's talk a little bit about DBZ, because I want to hear about Gogeta.
Gogeta! He doesn't have the song.
Oh, darn.
He does have, like, you know, some shredding guitar and shit, because, you know, it's Dragon Ball FighterZ. It's a Daisuke Ishiwatari joint. Of course, they gave him some guitar.
Yeah.
Released yesterday for Dragon Ball FighterZ is the latest DLC character, Super Saiyan God Super Saiyan Gogeta, aka the Gogeta form you see in the movie in Dragon Ball Super Broly. He's now my new point character.
Really?
Yes.
What makes him strong as, like, a point character?
Okay, so his assist is not very good. So he's definitely not great anywhere else. But, like, what do you want from a character? He's probably got it.
He has a dive kick, like, doesn't he?
He has a dive kick. He has two different slides, two different slide lows. He's got a DP, including a meterless DP.
Ooh.
He's got a full screen command throw. He's got a one button projectile that he can do on two different angles. He's got a projectile that follows up with the teleporting dive kick. He's got like a sort of a Rekka style kick. He's got great normals. He's really, really strong.
Yeah.
And really fun. He's just a really flashy character in a way that I think makes the rest, like, when Janemba came out, the previous DLC character, I was pretty underwhelmed by Janemba, partially just because I think he's dumb.
Yeah.
I've never been a fan of that character from the series, but also he just seemed kind of underwhelming.
Yeah, and I just, like, I like him more that it was just an excuse to bring Gogeta into the mix.
Hmm.
But yeah. Even then, you could still just have Gogeta and not necessarily have Janemba.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, he's a fan favorite for some reason. I don't know. I mean, like, there are cool elements to what he represents. Like, he does genuine teleporting, and he has some, like, weird visual effects associated with him. They aren't really represented in the game very well. But anyway, he was just a pretty straightforward character that honestly felt kind of underbaked to me. And I would say, in general, Season 1... of the DLC has felt better than Season 2, but Gogeta is just such a, it's so clear that they're really going all out for this character, and I'm going to assume Super Broly as well because of the movie tie-in. He's so flashy, his animations are really gorgeous, he has a lot of super attacks where they do cool stuff with the camera, like he's got a level 1 where he throws two quick blasts and the camera spins around him where he shoots like a barrage of like 1,000 blasts. And then he does, like, the rainbow orb from Fusion Reborn.
Yeah, and I noticed that, like, a lot of this, like, there's one particular motion, I think it's his level 3, in which he does like the Kamehameha with like all the fire everywhere.
Oh yeah, the final Kamehameha, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, I love that because they are like, it shows that, so the DB Fighter Z like engine is built around the idea of like replicating the old Dragon Ball like TV show, obviously. But for Gogeta, Super Saiyan God Super Saiyan, like, they clearly, like, took elements from the new movie, which was obviously way better animated than the old TV show. And it kind of shows that, like, it just shows that Arc System Works is like, yeah, we intentionally hold back on this, like, engine because we're trying to replicate a very specific look. But if you want us to go all out, we go all out. And mm-hmm. It's kind of been showing, like, I'm really excited that a new Guilty Gear trailer is going to drop this weekend, because I'm a huge Guilty Gear fan, and I am so excited for the new Guilty Gear, because, like, if you've seen the trailers for the new Guilty Gear, right?
I have, yeah.
They're absolutely gorgeous.
They're very pretty.
Yeah, and I cannot wait to see, like, what years of tinkering around with their engine and animation style does for that game.
I want to see more of Kai Kisuke's finger gloves.
Kai Kisuke's very good finger gloves. Fingerless finger gloves.
No, fingernail finger gloves.
That's right. They're not,
yeah.
It's unfair. It's unfair. But yeah, that'll drop that this weekend, I believe, at CEO Taku. Which,
yeah, I maybe we'll get a trailer for Broly as well. That'd be great.
That would but be
probably
not.
Probably too soon.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we got a teaser for it.
Yeah. I just am having, like, I also last night with I would say with the help of Gogeta, but that's honestly not true. But I finally hit the Super Saiyan 3 rank. Ooh. In ranked matches in Dragon Ball FighterZ. And actually, I did have Gogeta on my team, but basically how it went every match was that Gogeta went down really quickly, and then Broly did, like, one character victories. Because that's just how we do around here. The love of my life, the most satisfying things to me in all of fighting games is when people throw a beam at Broly and you lariat out of it. So just throw this big ball of plasma, and then you see this, like, moving little tuft sticking out of it, and the beam starts to fade, and you realize Broly is just charging through it with an arm outstretched. He catches them by the neck and just slams them into the wall. Ah, it's the greatest. It's
fucking great. That game rules.
Good character. That's so good. So good.
Yeah. I gotta get back into playing more of it, because I dropped off it pretty hard a while ago, because we no longer played it at my local, and like, that sucked. But the online netcode for that game is really good, so I really should just get back into it and play that more.
You should bum off of Jen's copy and play on PS4 against me.
I have a copy. It's just I don't have a PS4. So,
oh
yeah, huh. I had a PS4 for I had a, my roommate's PS4, and then I moved out of the apartment.
I know how it goes.
Yeah. But yeah.
Well, still, just yeah. I mean, you know how to play from the PC version. You know, just come over to Jen's, and we'll go a few rounds.
Yeah.
And you'll be like, yeah, you know, you're right. Gogeta's fucked. What a broken character. But doesn't feel strong. But it doesn't feel frustrating to fight the way GT Goku did. GT Goku is the thing that made me stop playing. It's because GT Goku is just... oh, it's just the worst.
With his big dumb stick.
And the fact that, like, a few characters, Broly, your normal combos just don't work on him. He's the only character in the game who will just fall out. And I was just like, okay, well, fuck this.
Now I have to learn special combos specifically for this character. That sucks.
Yeah, it's very, very annoying. And then fucking does his little stick into, you know, fucking spirit bomb, and he combos after the spirit bomb. Oh, I hate it. I hate it.
Mm-hmm. Anyway,
do we want to call it an episode, or do we want to close it out with some spicy? Anybody got a real spicy one?
Like a spicy game or opinion or?
Sure, I've been playing Final Fantasy VII. It sucks. I don't know. I've been playing Custer's Revenge, and it's great. Something spicy. Give me something to chew on.
Fire Emblem's still good.
Zam!
Bam! Got him!
All right, I guess we're kicking it to the plug zone then. Kyrie, this is your first time on the show, so why don't you go first?
As usual, listen to Ultimate Despair Reprise. We just finally started playing Danganronpa 2, and that's going to be very exciting. The latest episode we had us going through all the different characters and our different takes on the characters, and it was just a reminder of how good the characters in that game is. And yeah, we'll be having a more episode soon of that. So at You Despaircast, follow it. We recently crested 150 followers. That blows my mind.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
That's great. Hey, actually, I've got a request for Ultimate Despair Cast.
What's that?
For y'all. I want you, during a future, like daily life segment, I want you to play in the background Vacation by Vitamin C.
We'll see. We'll see.
Okay. It's a request. It's not a demand. I'm not your boss.
Keep that in mind. Six.
It's a great song.
Okay.
Would you... Wait.
What?
Do you not like Vacation by Vitamin C?
I don't think I like Vacation by Vitamin C.
Did you ever watch Pikachu's Vacation? Did you watch Pokemon the first movie?
Yes, I watched Pokemon the first movie like years ago.
Yeah! It's the intro. It's fantastic.
Maybe I have to listen to it again. I don't know.
Okay. Stop the show. This is on the podcast. I don't fucking care. Vitamin C Vacation. Yeah, for some reason it's in my YouTube search history. God, I wonder why.
How often are you listening to this, Six?
Right now. Come on in, Groovy.
This is jaunty.
Yeah, it's a jaunty little tune. Oh, God.
Is this Quad City DJs?
No, this is Vitamin C.
Oh my god.
Jen, go ahead and do your plugs.
Alright, you can find me at JBU3 on Twitter.
If you have to shout, you can turn down Groovy. You can right click Groovy.
All right.
I already turned them down.
Okay, you can find me at JB3 on Twitter. you can also find us on patreon.com/scanlinemedia and scanlinemedia.com. And you can check out Reading Games Online, readinggames.online, for Novel Not New, a True End podcast, where we recently did Unavowed, and next month we're going to be doing 80 Days, so if you have an iPad, a PC, a phone, a tablet, I think I already said iPads, that's already a tablet.
Switch in a couple of days.
Yeah, switch in a couple of days. You can play 80 Days on anything, and then you can listen to our podcast and write us questions about our podcast, and it's a podcast.
It is a podcast.
It almost seems like Jenna is having a hard time doing a plug zone while music is blasting in her ear.
Yeah, a little bit. How about that?
Well, I'll show you how it's done. So I'm Six Detmar. You can find me on Twitter at Six Detmar, SixDetmar. I've got a pinned tweet there that tells you all the shows that I do. I am in the same places as Jen. You can find me at scanlinemedia.com. I just put out two articles this week. One, a list of visual novels you should play instead of playing that KFC dating sim, which is not actually worth your time. There's some great games in the visual novel.
Fuck that KFC game.
Right? There's some great games in the visual novel genre, and the genre often gets sold short as parody games get all the attention. Play the real ones. I also put an article on Polaris from Control, a great character, best character of 2019. And then also patreon.com/scanlinemedia. Support us, help us make more things. And also check out Oops All Anime, our patron show. We'll be back in the future with another playlist. But until then, folks, I need a break. I need a vacation.
I think I need a vacation, too.
I will repeat after you and say that I do need a vacation.